Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
We live in a world where sometimes we say it's okay for men to show their emotions, but in the same way, we still expect men to be strong. It's good that you showed your emotion. Now, go be strong now. Come on, go be strong now.
How do men process emotions?
We love different, we care different, we show our emotion different, we process our emotion different. Women expect men maybe sometimes being vulnerable in the way they are, in a more feminine way. Do you know what men need? Do you know what your brother, your father needs, really? Or do you have a perceived idea of what they need? Do you have a perceived idea what you think men's vulnerability is? Have you ever asked?
Men, statistically speaking, struggle way more in silence and alone and deal with things with a different mask to the outside world.
I always thought I should be this unhappy. I always thought I deserve to be this unhappy. I always thought I should work just like my mother, because paying your mortgage or paying your rent is more important than your happiness. But then I thought, no, this pain is not worth it.
You're not your trauma. You're not your wound.
It's not what you provide. It's not the talents or how good you are with your hands or whatever you do in your job or how you are to other people. Just you as a person are of value. There is something valuable about you.
Welcome to another episode of Real, Raw and Authentic. Today I'm sitting in Amsterdam and I'm sitting with Jonathan Booter. He's a veteran, he's a father, and a systemic business coach. Jonathan, welcome at my podcast. Nice to have you.
Thank you for the invitation.
I am really excited to speak to you, because before we dive in, I want to know a little bit more about your journey. How come you became a Dutch soldier? Please share a little bit more.
Well, I think as a 17-year-old, like many 17-year-old, you're always thinking about what should we do, you do next. And I was the kid that never knew what I wanted to become. So I did a test, like all those 17 years old, like, what should I do? What should be the next study? And eventually I just did the education that came out of the test. And then while I was doing that, I always had like the little boy's dream, becoming a soldier, going into the army. I don't know, I just loved those things like many boys do. So I just, after a few difficult things in my life, and I was around 19 around then, I was like, I don't like this education. I don't like how is it going. And I still had that gnawing thought of maybe you should just go join the army. You wanted to do that, and they'll do that. So I just stopped my stopped school and joined the army, the Luchtmobile Brigade, like they say in the Dutch. It's a really tough training, but I was really glad that I did it. Because
how does the training look like?
It's a half year, and then they train you like with discipline. They train you in the forest, they train you with weapons, working out, like all type of things to become ready for war, to become a person who takes responsibility for themselves, who take responsibility for the people surrounding them. I think around that time it was really good for me to learn those things. I needed that as a boy. In a way, I think, and maybe later we can touch the subject about what I've been through as a kid, but
no.
It was good for me. I really became more of a man, and I needed to become that, and I needed to become more confident, needed to trust in myself more, be proud of myself more, and that's what Army gave me as well. Like through a sense of accomplishment, through a hardship and then overcoming hardship, you know, and while facing yourself, learning more about yourself, it was really good for me as a person, and I learned so much I still use until this day, and I think those are really good attributes to learn, and I'm really happy that I stopped with school. I'm really happy that I followed the route just to go into the army, and it was a life experience, even though the times weren't always really happy, because I was an odd one out in the army. I've always been the odd one out in my life until I became entrepreneur. The odd duckling. I always felt the odd duckling, and I was an odd duckling in the army as well. But besides that, there were so many things that I learned in the army. And I'm happy I had those experiences, the same as my experience went going overseas. In 2008, I went to Afghanistan as well. As a soldier, you train for something, and that's war. So I'm glad I had that experience, and I'm glad to see those parts of life, to see that the world isn't just a safe place, and those things are happening in the world as well. And luckily for me, I had a really how do you say it? My time overseas wasn't as intense as it could be, so I was spared most of the horrific stuff of war. So that's luckily for me. At that time, when I was young, I was training for war, and all you want is action, and I had less action than I wanted, but in the end I'm really happy that that happened. If you look at what traumatic effects war can bring, and with PTSD and everything, so I'm happy most of those horrific things were spared, or for me it was spared. But besides that, it's a really growing experience, really life experience you also take with you for the rest of your life. And all those experience from the army, going overseas, helped me grow into the person I am right now.
You touched upon your childhood. Difficult things happened. Do you mind sharing how that looked like for you?
My mom and dad were separated at a really young age, when I was 5. And then my mom really couldn't really take care of us, me and my two bigger sisters. So we traveled a lot. We moved a lot. We were living in many different houses, then with our grandma and grandpa, and then with another house. And then my mom met a man, and then in another house. And then eventually she got a burnout, or I went into the group home. I was placed in like a type of foster care, so I didn't live at home anymore from my age of 8 till 11. And meanwhile, my father really couldn't take care of us. He had a mental illness. He's schizophrenic as well, so he has his episodes, depression, manic depression as well. So my father really couldn't take care of us as well. So I had like, I learned from a really young age, I can only count on myself, and I should take care of myself as well. And that's, I touched the subject of feeling the odd one out. I think that it's my protection shield, my survival mechanism as a child. Like, I need this wall to protect myself from others. I need to do it on my own. Because as a kid, it was a necessity to do it on my own. So, the good things about walls, it keeps people out, but it's also won't let people in. And if you look at that 20 years later, I was in the army trying to still keep people out, And it was really hard then to connect with people on my own way, and also me thinking I am the odd one out. So I think it's it was helped me in the army to, yeah, help me is in a wrong way, but it made people not come close to me, and I did that as well. So it was like the way I was, the way people reacted to me made me even lonelier in the army. Mm-hmm. So that what made me the odd one out. And you talk about, people talk a lot about brotherhood in the army a lot, but because of my wall, because of my survival mechanism, I made myself the odd one out as well. And so that is the negative part of me in the army, and that's what I wanted to talk about, because that's what happens if you keep surviving on those survival mechanism. And then when I was 20, I never knew I was doing it. Now I know. Now I work with people how to heal from those survival mechanisms. But mm-hmm. when I was 20 in the army, I was just trying to make it through the day and don't understand where I was coming from. I just wanted people to like me. And I didn't know how to connect in a way without the wall. Yeah.
If you look back from childhood, teenage years to early adulthood, until you had maybe that point of realizing what was going on inside of you, can you reflect on what people would see and what you had experienced within yourself? Would that be totally different of what people perceive on the outside, how you behaved, how you showed up, and the way you've actually felt growing up?
I think a lot of what was going on inside me, people wouldn't see. A lot of thoughts about being hyper aware what people were doing, what people were saying, being hyper aware how I should act, what I should say. Like, I was in a way always wearing a mask, mm-hmm. and always like trying to fit in, always trying to say the right thing. And it also comes from a bit of my childhood. I have, as a child, I was diagnosed with ADHD. And there are so many times I heard, sit still, be quiet, mm-hmm. act normal, don't be this way. And what I got from that is just don't be yourself.
Always negative feedback about yourself. Yeah,
or my mother would say, did you took your medicine already? Mm-hmm. Or I also went to special education because of that, not because I couldn't learn, but I was just too hyper. And yeah, in those days, it was like, okay, here, here's some Ritalin, here's some medicine. Mm-hmm. There was no structure at home. There was no, so yeah, the easy way out is just medicine. Mm-hmm. So as a young, besides my mother not, who couldn't be there for me, like emotionally, my dad wasn't there. It was also the part of ADHD, taking Ritalin, that made me feel like I'm not enough as a person. I can be myself. So that's also in a way why I learned that if I behave the way people want it, then I will be okay, then I will get the attention. And that way I always was hyper conscious of what people were thinking, if I wasn't too crazy, if I wasn't just being too youthful. Then if I would be too youthful, I love being crazy still. I love those parts of myself. But there was a period in my life where I shamed myself, and I was scared to be shamed of those parts of myself. And then I thought if I would be youthful or crazy right now, people wouldn't take me serious. Mm-hmm. But it's a big part of myself. And I now know like those two can coexist. You can be and crazy, and the in-depth serious guy can talk about really serious things. And I embrace myself so much that in my work now, most of my clients love those two aspects, that like how I say that darkness and light can come together. Well, talking about the most shitty thing that happened into your life, and then 3 seconds later, we both laugh because I made an unserious remark and acted crazy in a way that they felt, it can coexist. It don't always have to be shitty. Of course, there's time to sit in your feelings, but now I use those aspects of myself as a strength. But I used to think it's a way to get cast out, to be, it's too different than other people. So I get a long history as me having so many thoughts, so many things inside of myself of not being enough. Maybe I have to do different what other people expect of me. And that's where the wall and the mask came handy for me, I thought. Mm-hmm. Like, if I just do this, then they will love me. If I just do this, then they will like me. But in the end, they never love me, they love my mask. In the end, they never like me, they like my mask. And I wasn't real. And I think that's, in the end, people have probably a good bullshit radar. So if you're not real, they will see, they will know, they will feel it. So there was me holding back myself, and people will notice that as well. So I think that's what caused me to be the someone people don't really want to get close to sometimes, because I'd like it's just superficial, and I couldn't be other than superficial because I was protecting myself, or I was scared that people will judge me for who I was. So
it's very interesting that you use the word superficial. Mm-hmm. It's like surface level, not deep diving into your emotions. A lot of times men, and that's a bit like not a mismatch, but it also doesn't mean that women are doing it better. It's not at all. But men, from statistically speaking, struggle way more in silence and alone and deal with things with a different mask to the outside world, which comes across as superficial. Would you agree?
That's true. Yeah, I think men have a way of dealing with their emotions that are different than women. That's one thing. I don't know. In that way, I think it's sometimes men get punished for opening up, and sometimes I think we live in a world where sometimes we say it's okay for men to show their emotions, but in the same way, we still expect men to be strong. And those two cannot always be at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But in a weird way, sometimes, generally speaking, the world sometimes want men to be strong, and at the same time, I want you to be vulnerable. And then for men, it's really hard. It's like one or the other. And then they would rather choose being strong or perceived strong than showing their emotions or showing the world or people around them that they cannot hold everything together, even though men are human as well. And of course, men can not carry the world on their shoulders every day. So men and women both are judged out in the way they're vulnerable against the world, show how they are vulnerable. And for men, it's like you still have to be strong, even though sometimes the world say, yeah, we don't want, you don't have to be strong all the time. But still, it is expected sometimes. And that's the hard struggle for a lot of men, to show their emotions. Because in the end of the day, yeah, it's good that you showed your emotion. No, go be strong now. Come on, go be strong now. And from my own personal experience, I was a sufferer in silence for a long time as well, besides those experiences in the army, but also I met when I was 23, I met my ex just before I went to Afghanistan. Then while we were in Afghanistan, we fell in love. And then when we came back, it was like, okay, let's start this love story. I bought a house, moved in together. And then half a year later, it was the relationship ended because I had too many shit I didn't look at. And that was yeah, something that's really not healthy if you are together. Those patterns will show up if you live together. So it was the first woman I lived together, was the first house I bought, and I changed my job from the army to working as a prison guard, and then it was gone. And then I felt in a really dark hole. I lived on the other side of the Netherlands, no friends, no people surrounding me. I felt lost, and that was 4 years for me, feeling lost, feeling
lonely.
I had no one, going clubbing alone, going on a holiday alone. Also, this because I didn't work on myself in that way, I couldn't connect with my colleagues in the prison the same way I couldn't connect to the colleagues in the army. So I was the odd one out there as well. But in those 4 years, I learned to embrace myself a little bit more and more. But still, I couldn't open up myself in the way I wanted. So I was someone who suffered in silence for 4 years. And it's hard for the female listeners to explain that male loneliness is different than female loneliness.
Oh, can you explain?
If a woman says she's lonely, she maybe has talked to like 10 people that week.
Mm-hmm.
A man who hasn't talked to anyone. And there is a difference. Not to generalize, not to say that your loneliness is less if you are a woman. I never want to compare someone's pain, because it's your pain is your pain and it's valid. You as a person is valid, your pain is valid. But I want to touch this subject because it's really important to say. It's not for a reason there, and it's a men's mental health month, it's November now. There are so many male suicides. It's like an epidemic. It's like around 500,000 a year. It's like 40,000 a month, and in a week it's like 14,000. And just when this podcast is over, 1,500 men has killed themselves. So if we talk about dealing your pain and suffer in silence, there is a real suffering going on with men who feel like they cannot share it with anyone, and men really truly don't have anyone. And of course, this is part of the problem, is men finding it hard to open up. I can understand that. I was the same. Me being Mr. Superficial, me suffering in silence, not knowing how to open up. But there's also, we really have to touch the subject, is, yeah, can we talk about men problems and then let it be about the men? You know, two things can coexist. There can be women problems and men mm-hmm. problems. There can be children problems and men problems. So I think it's really important to look at us as a society. What are we doing for men? What are we expecting of men? And how can we be them there for them in order for them to don't feel like they have to suffer in silence, that they don't have to be strong, and that there can be strength in being vulnerable, but being vulnerable in a way that helps them instead of make them feel worse.
What's the one thing we got wrong about vulnerability, particularly in men?
I think one of the things is really important, that who asked that question is also important. Because if a man would ask that question, the expectation would be different. So I think women expect men maybe sometimes being vulnerable in the way they are, in a more feminine way. And I think it's really important to see what a man needs needs and how a man shows affection, how a man shows he cares. And I think it's okay that that is different.
Can you give an example?
Men deal with their emotions differently. So maybe if a man talks about something at work, he just wants you to listen and then tell that colleague is an asshole and that's it. He doesn't want you to solve it. Or that's sometimes men don't want to talk about their problem while they're looking in your eyes. Men love playing video games, fishing, like sitting in a car and then, or walking and then talk about things they're dealing with without having to sit, talk for an hour about the emotion while looking at someone. Men love doing things while talking about their problems. Some things my partner sometimes struggle with is I love to deal with my problems by myself and just need a space where I can just deal and process everything, and then I don't need help in any way besides you're helping me to deal with it alone and give me that space so I can be alone.
So what would men need from women in that scenario?
But of course, it's about communication. So the man has to say, when I, my father started chemotherapy last week, again, last year, he almost died because of cancer. He had really tough surgery and everything. And he got cancer again, started chemotherapy again, new type of cancer last week. And some evenings, I just want some space alone. And I just and it's my responsibility to communicate that to my wife. And I'm like, darling, go to bed. I'm an evening person. And just communicate that I need some time alone. Or you go into the living room. Let me sit in the office for a few hours. And just give me the space I need to just process it in an own way. And not to speak generally. All men are different, all women are different. But I think the way men handle emotions or tough experiences is sometimes on their own. And sometimes that's with their partner, but in quiet. So the best way to support your husband or your partner or your brother or who else, can you support them? Well, not filling up the silence, which is pretty hard for some women. Sorry to speak generally again, but just be there. And wait, he's struggling with the whole world and he doesn't want anything else than just process it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes men are more physical creatures.
Mm-hmm. Do they want to be physically held?
To support them being held, just the rub over their shoulder, just a hug that lasted just a second longer. And that's a way that men feel like, oh, she got me. Or when a man asks for advice, he really thinks he values your judgment on a really important decision. And then you can show, he really appreciates me because he asked for advice. Men are problem solvers on their own. So if they want their partner or persons in their surroundings, they really value their judgment. So that's the way they're trying to be vulnerable is, what do you think about this? What decision should I make? There's also a different way of vulnerability for a man, because asking for help doesn't look like asking for help sometimes. And in a man, and men do it in a different way. And I think men shouldn't judge how women process their emotions, but vice versa, women shouldn't judge how men deal with their emotions or how men are with other men while talking with emotions. And nowadays it's even hard to say that men and women are different. But I'm sorry to tell you, we are biologically different. We have different brains. We process different things. And I think if we celebrate each other's differences and then see, try to see where someone is coming from, that's way more helpful. You know, an example of when I talk with my wife and she talks about her colleague, and then eventually the story goes to the dark of her barber, and in my mind I'm like, what's going on here? You were talking about your colleague, and why are you talking about the dark of your barber? What is the conclusion of this? What is the problem I need to fix? And a man is just there sitting, listening. A man wouldn't do that. And it's, for me, it's really helpful if my wife says to me, I just want you to listen. I don't want any advice. For me, with my male brain, it's really helpful. So like, my goal is to listen. Okay, perfect. Then I know what she needs. Then I can just listen. For a man, it's really helpful to know what a woman needs, what her needs are, but vice versa as well. What are men's needs? How does a man show vulnerability? How does he feels that he is loved? And that's different. We love different, we care different, we show our emotion different, we process our emotion different. And the more we see the person, and if the more we can put our ego aside, put our own perceptions aside of what we think vulnerability should be, of how men should be vulnerable in a feminine way, but can you see the person that's in front of you and what does that person need? And for me, for someone who for 90% coaches women and mothers, or the way I look at my wife, or how I can, I have a 2-year-old daughter, if I can just put myself to the side and just see how they are, and I can help them the best for what they need in that moment. And I think it's really important, especially looking at what men need. Do you know what men need? Do you know what your brother, your father needs? Really? Mm-hmm. Are you looking at them in that way? Or do you have a perceived idea of what they need? Do you have a perceived idea what you think men vulnerability is? Have you ever asked? And yeah, that's a tough, that's still a conversation needed, especially looking at the suicide rate. Mm-hmm. Have you ever asked, what do you truly need? And of course, it's a man's responsibility to then talk about what they need. That's another subject. Of course, that's hard, and you need to bridge that gap as well. But without the question, what do you need? It's really hard to answer it as well.
Do you also think the love language of men is differently? And how does it show up? How is a man showing love?
Not all men, of course, are the same. So I'm definitely here not speaking as a spokesperson of all men. One of those things I really want to touch on is, like, it also really depends on your relationship as a child, the relationship of your mother, the systemic things, that the way you were brought up. So it's the people feel love the way they're used to, got love from their parents, and the way the relationship of their parent was, that's the how your parent relationship was, is the way you think love is most of the times. And most people get into their first relationship that looks like the love they got from their mother or their father, and always search for that because that's the safe feeling. Or they do the straight opposite because they're a rebel and just want to do the opposite. But so one of those things men want to be loved is part of the experience and the systemic things they're used to. Another way, like I said, men are physical creatures. So physical touch is a love language mostly for most men, which they will feel appreciated. We cannot deny that we have a hormonal difference, men and women. So testosterone goes up every day. We start in the morning and it slowly goes down during the night. We have a 24-hour cycle, and every day we have that cycle. So are men the same in that way? Most men are. I think part of that testosterone, part of our hormonal cycle, physical touch is a way we feel good. We feel that we are loved. We feel that we are appreciated. And I think showing the men we care about things they care about, but in a different way than women. Men love to have someone behind them, being a cheerleader more than a problem solver.
Mm-hmm.
So someone who believes in them. I love when my woman, like this morning, just wishing me good luck on the podcast, and just remember that, and then you're gonna rock this, you know, and just being a cheerleader and just celebrate achievements, you know, and just believe in me on the moments I don't believe in myself, like being there, and then yeah, even on the moments I don't believe in myself, being that cheerleader. Like, you've got this, you know? And I think for most men, having someone believe in them, for most men, especially in a relationship, having a wife or a girlfriend who, like, yeah, I understand that your mission is important for you. I understand that those things are important for you, and I really want you to do them. And I support that wholeheartedly, even though I think it's weird that you go fishing the whole week with your friends. I think it's weird, whatever the man pet peeve is, but having that support and having that feeling seen in the way they want to be seen, in the way that's important for them.
That's beautifully put. So more support, cheerleader, but also allowing them to have their own space to sit with themselves? Because for women, often that distance creates doubt, trying to fix something or bringing back the connection. For men, it's not disconnection. It's just taking up space for yourself and actually still connecting, even though it's perceived as distance.
Yeah, I think, and that's another example of how we process emotion differently.
How do men process emotions?
Well, sometimes we're not dealing with the emotions, but doing something else, and let them be. Don't act under emotion or create another positive emotions to deal with the negative emotions. Well, that's why exercise is so good for everyone, both men and women. But for men, it really feels good to do something they feel good about. Yeah, there was a quote. I wrote it down just in case, because it's perfect. It's about Chris Williamson,
mm-hmm.
And he got a phrase: give a man a purpose and ability to achieve it, and he will crawl over broken glass with a smile.
Wow.
And it's not about those emotions. It's not about the hardship. Men sometimes love hardship, but with the right support or with the right purpose and the ability. So sometimes it's a person that supports them, or sometimes it's feeling to have a sense of achievement. In what way? And when I feel stressed and in that moment I can't deal with my business, I feel better over myself. If I do something to clean the house, or if I do the laundry, or if I do something action-wise, in that way I feel a sense of accomplishment and I feel a lot better. And that is weird, but it helps me with the stress. I don't always need to talk to someone to deal with my stress. Mm. I sometimes need to feel that sense of accomplishment by going to the gym, feel better, by doing something else, and feel like, I'm doing something that makes me feel better. now I can handle other things as well. And then give me a small purpose, a small goal, because I am goal-orientated as a man. I love chase something. I'm a hunter. That's the way I am. And testosterone makes me want to hunt and give me something to make me feel good. Not that I have a fragile ego or that I'm insecure, but I got a lot of stress. And maybe sometimes that stress can overwhelm me, or I cannot deal with it. The same, like, I cannot deal with my father's cancer. I'm not a doctor, but give me something else so I can feel better. Then I can handle the stress in a different way. I feel stronger and I feel more like, okay, I can deal with this. So maybe I can deal with that as well.
So, from your perspective, what's the number one thing a man would need from a woman in a relationship to make it work?
Can I read you something?
Please, go ahead.
I wrote something down just before this podcast. So sometimes I'm better with writing things down than just coming up with the thing. And I really wanted to be valuable for the people that are listening. Men wear armor all day, every day. We want to take it off. The question for the female listener is, can you provide the space where he can lay down his weapons? Can you be the sanctuary where he can lay his head on your lap and you simply stroke his hair without judgment? A space that says, it's okay that you can't carry the world right now. Put your weapon down. Stop fighting. Stop holding it all together. You don't have to be strong right now. And that does not make you weak. And I will not judge you for it. I will carry you for a while. Right now, it can be all about you. And it's that softness, that femininity, that safe harbor. That's what men will move heaven and earth for. And stronger still, that's what entire wars have been fought over. Thinking about Helen of Troy, it's a classic story about a war fought over a woman, a symbol of what men will do for the kind of devotion and connection.
Wow, I love that. Thank you so much, Jonathan. It's really moving.
They don't want to wear their armor all the time. They don't want to be strong. They don't want to go outside and then compare themselves, who is stronger than me. And like I said, not all men are the same, but we're wired to survive, and men survive in a different way than women. So biologically, if men walk outside, can we handle that man? Is he stronger than me? Am I weak? It's just a way we deal with how to go around in this world. And that's in that way, we always have a type of armor.
Where does that question, am I weak, comes from, in your opinion? Is this something taught growing up in young boys, that they should not be weak?
I think that's a difficult thing to answer, because a part of it is the purpose thing. A part of it is like men need something to chase. Part of it is men wanted to achieve things, and if you cannot achieve, you feel weaker. Like most people or most men who take their own lives don't have a lot of purpose in their lives. They don't have a reason to live for. Most of the reasons why men live for is to devote their love to a woman. And in this day and age, women don't need men. So where does all the purpose of the men go? Well, video games, all the wrong thing, red pill, all those, like, see, like, they feel they don't have a purpose. Family gives men purpose a lot as well. So we have a decline in family. We have a decline in family staying together. So there's a lot of way we have a society where thing that makes men feel strong is having that purpose of being there for their wives, being there for their girlfriends, having a family, being that family person. Like 2 years ago, I became a father, and I always, I'm lucky I have multiple purposes besides my business, besides helping many people with systemic issues and creating happiness for my clients. But I'm a father now as well. Mm-hmm. And I will give my life for my daughter and my wife. That is part of me feeling strong and having that purpose. If I don't have that, I would feel weaker. So I'm glad I have that, because now I have a reason every day to wake up. And if you don't have that, I don't know if it's society, is it biological? That for me is really hard to answer. But a lot of those men killing themselves most of the time don't have that purpose, and that's why they feel weaker, because they needed that purpose in their lives. And yeah, sometimes the way society asks how boys should be, how men should be, and the way society wants men to be strong is not realistic in the world we live in now. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, in a way, I think society fails men and boys. In that sense, yeah, men feel weaker because of the expectations that society give them that they cannot ever accomplish.
Do we put too much pressure and expectation on men nowadays?
The wrong expectations, because too much, if men love the right amount of expectations. I think the word too much is like, it's wrong to give expectations to a man. No, men love expectations, but the right expectations. Like I said, that gives them purpose. Mm-hmm. If you give them the right expectation, like I said, they crawl over broken glass with a smile. That's how men are. Just see them for what they truly, really need. Like I said, it's hard to answer. Mm-hmm. It's the way society is. It's the way sometimes with men are searching for where they are needed. If I'm not needed at home, if I don't need for financial support, if society doesn't need me, where am I needed? It used to be clear, but now where I am now, men need to evolve right now as well, of mm-hmm. course. Yeah, I'm not never gonna hold on judgment, like to say, yeah, it's all women in society's fault. No, men need to evolve as well. So I think most men find it really hard to be flexible. Most men find it really hard to change and evolve with the new times right now. So then I think that's part of the problem as well.
How can men adapt to the new times?
Well, we have a society where, yeah, your purpose is shifting. So your responsibility is to work harder on finding that purpose and then change the way you look at your purpose and find a purpose besides just having a wife and besides just having a family, if that's not for the cards yet, or else you're just chasing a pipe dream that's, well, not having it, you feel lonely, depressed, and not good enough yet. You can feel happy without having that family, without having the wife or the girlfriend, or happier, of mm-hmm. course. It's amazing speaking now as someone who has the first serious relationships in his life, first being a father as well. Of course, that's amazing, but I found a way to feel inner peace and a way to have purpose in a way that made me more relaxed, made me more zen in a way that I never thought that was possible. And that was before my family. Mm-hmm. I found a way to feel happy with who I truly am. So I think the men love chasing goals. Why not chase the goal to be the best of service for yourself first, in a way, and not to be egotistical, but
self-loving.
Yeah, self-loving, and a way to know what you as a person need. And I think for both relationships, that's really important. Like, what makes you feel better? What makes you feel whole? What makes you feel loved? And
but how can we be? And that's a fine line for many if they start maybe on their journey finding themselves, finding also the purpose. But how can we be more self-loving but not self-centered?
That is a great question. Especially nowadays, I think we live in a society where we think independence is the way we achieve happiness. But I think we become human because of other people surrounding us. And this week I had a session with a client, and I'm like, she was applying for a new job. And I said, if you get the job, please tell me. I love to celebrate with you. And we talked about how lucky are we that we can celebrate those things with the people that we love. And that's one of the most beautiful things in life, sharing those emotions. And I gave the example of a rock star who went to a concert with 50,000 people singing their songs, then came home in a villa where wife and children doesn't live anymore. Mm-hmm. His children don't want to see him anymore. The big house is all empty. He goes onto the he lays on the couch, and he feels miserable, and he feels like he's not enough.
Oh, it's like the Eminem song, Mockingbird.
And then he's sitting there. So those beautiful experiences are beautiful because you have someone to share with it. But even last week when I called my father, hey, how went chemo? How was chemo? How do you feel? My wife was sitting there with me. Even the hardships, the darkest moments, if you have someone to share it with, it feels like you're sharing a burden. So in a way, yes, it's important to love yourself, but to understand it's because you can be there for the other one better as well. Because you're pouring not from an empty glass. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I give an example. It's like you have an old cup with, I don't know, schotel. You put it on. I don't know how it's called in English right now.
A bowl?
Just some like an old-fashioned cup you put it on.
A mug.
And then you pour all the way up. That's your self-love. And the way you want to love other people is when the water overflows. Mm-hmm. And then that's the love you want to give to the other people. You know, when I was going into that phase of being really lonely while I was working there in the prison, being not happy there, all alone, if I would do the job I was doing right now, I couldn't help people the way I could now. You wouldn't like having a session with me when I was feeling like that. But now I feel much stronger. I feel like those things, the trauma, things that had happened to me, I overcame them. I worked on my traumas. I worked on my systemic issues. I worked on my attachment issues. I worked on that wall I was talking about. And now I can truly love someone because I can truly love myself. And the means to an end is loving yourself for loving yourself. No, it's loving yourself so you can have an even richer life. So you wake up rich because you feel the sense of I'm enough. And most of our problems in life is we get into relationships, we do jobs, we do things we don't like because we think that's what we deserve from a place of, and what I always say to my clients, our outside world becomes like our inside world. So if you operate from the feeling of not being enough, and I've lived that for years, I grew up with parents not feeling enough. I just did the same like this, and like, oh, that's the way you should treat yourself. you do the things you think you deserve. And from the place of feeling not enough, you most of the times you don't think you deserve more. Even worse, some people think I deserve less than what I have now because they don't feel enough. So working on yourself, loving yourself is a way to wake up and finally feel whole and finally to live a life you don't chase that's empty. You can't fill emptiness with more emptiness. So if you wake up rich, wake up loved, then you can truly be there for yourself. What do I truly need? What really makes me happy? And knowing yourself, knowing your needs is a really important thing about that. And with the added bonus, if you know what you need, you can communicate it with the people surrounding you. You can communicate your boundaries. You can communicate with your boss, with your partner. You can say, this is what I need. And from a place of love, that's even better. So you can create a life which you deserve because you love yourself. And that's better for everyone in your surrounding area. So loving yourself is always a benefit for the people mm-hmm. surrounding you. Like I said, it's the love that comes out of the cup. And then that's what you give to people. It's always the excess of mm-hmm. love. And then in that way, in the end of the day, if you are on your deathbed, you will not celebrate your independence. Look how strong I was all alone. You cannot take your money with you, so you won't celebrate, look how much money I have on my bank account when you are on your deathbed. You don't celebrate that you worked 60, 80 hours a week. So if you think about independence in that way, if you truly think my independence is a way for me to not need anyone, then you will feel really empty in your deathbed. And in that way, and this is a reminder for yourself, and that's why I have a bracelet on called Memento Mori. Remember that you're going to die. You are going to die, and what's really important are those things that make you feel alive and the people you can share it with. Because those two is that purpose and people you love to share it with is what makes most people happy. And the thing I'm going to love today is going home and it's like, I had such a great conversation with Caroline.
Me too. Grateful. Going home grateful.
That sharing made this experience and that moment even better than going alone and then like, oh, I celebrate. Nothing wrong mm-hmm. with tapping yourself on the shoulder and saying you're proud. But like I said, you feel better when you share your great experience and your sad experience with other people. So mm-hmm. loving yourself is a way to even get more love from the right people and a way to show the world how you are treated. In order for you to get that love, maybe especially on those dark moments, to have the right support and the right love from people surrounding you. And speaking from someone who didn't have that type of love for years, mm-hmm. who had attachment issues and a big wall, who nothing more wanted to feel that love from other people, but couldn't ask for it, felt like I shouldn't ask for it, but that's mm-hmm. all that I really wanted. That's all, speaking about little Jonathan, that's all that the little kid in me wanted. And we all, in our own way, are that little kid sometimes. And being hyper-independent doesn't make that little kid go away. We sometimes want that little kids to be cherished, be loved, be seen, be emotional, be sad, be stressed, and then for someone to be there with their open arms, unconditionally loved, it's okay, whatever is going on. It's okay if you're mm-hmm. stressed, you're angry. It's okay that you don't know it anymore. It's okay you're overwhelmed. The best outcome in your life would be if you have people you love that are there and who can be that person. Most of people don't have that. That's why they go to people like us,
yeah.
The therapists, coaches and everything. So there is finally a place where they can be themselves without judgment, where someone will learn them unconditional love, will show them unconditional love and learn them how they can unconditionally love themselves. But how amazing would it be if you have both? Or if you have those people surrounding you?
So true.
With a friend, with a partner. And I'm lucky I have both. I'm lucky I can be that person for someone, mm-hmm. which enriches my life in another other way. But I also know from experience how hard it is to don't have that. Most of my life I didn't have that. And
you mentioned the absence of emotional safety, of the, maybe the lack of love, physical safety. You mentioned also you had walls up. You were avoiding emotions. You couldn't connect on a deeper level with a partner. For someone who might be relating to this all, how can a man start reconnecting with their feelings, with their emotions in a safe way without getting overwhelmed or terrified?
I think most of people going through that experience, and talking about my own experience, is you don't sit still and realize you're doing it. So in most of those cases, I think you're doing it so automatically. You're living your life so from survival mechanism, from trauma response, from just trying to get through the day. And you're so used to stuffing all the bad stuff in the room, opening the door, putting more bad shit in and closing the door as quick as you can. So just sit in it longer than you're doing now, because in a way you're avoiding feeling the pain you're feeling on a daily basis. We have a great, our brain works in an amazing way. We always try to avoid pain, but you can use it as an advantage as well. So because of hurtful experiences, you try to avoid it, you shut yourself off, in my way, I build a wall. I didn't let people come close because, if I let close, as a child, I learned that my mother couldn't see me because I wasn't attention, or else, I get judged for the way I acted. So here's some Ritalin, or even because as a child, I couldn't live at home, so I felt even more abandoned. And in a way, the rest of my life, I tried to avoid those painful experiences. But that was in an unhelpful way. And my attachment issues were in an unhelpful way, not helping me in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
It helped me in the short run to not get even more hurt. But in the long run, it made me more lonely, more not loved. Mm-hmm. The mask I put on trying to protect myself, like I always say, those survival mechanisms or those protection layers are your guardian angels. They mean well, but they don't work for you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And those protection mechanisms, those guardian angels, also make you avoid those type of pains you're feeling, those loneliness, mm-hmm. the thing you're mm-hmm. sitting in. And that's why I said you can use the pain to your benefit, because we want to avoid the pain. So if you really, and maybe you need some help with someone or a friend,
mm-hmm.
like, how are you truly feeling? Without distraction, without sex, drugs, going to work, drinking, gaming, without social media, without filling your head with external things, just sit in how you're feeling. Are you really, really sitting in it? And I think for some people, not for everyone, the pain of, I truly am not happy, and not in an in a way to make you feel worse about your circumstances, to make you feel less bad about yourself, but in a way, like an eye-opening way. This pain, why should I deserve this pain? Why should I deserve feeling this way? And in that way, you can use that type of pain for, maybe I should maybe avoid this type of pain. Maybe there is something else for me.
Mm-hmm.
But you really need a space where you can ask that question. And most of the time, speaking for me, it was 4 years. I was working in a prison. And meanwhile, I did a small steps to grow my confidence, small steps to feel better about myself. And 4 years, I worked on myself a little bit more, but it took me 4 years to finally get that voice. Like, what else is possible for me?
Mm-hmm.
Why should I work in a job I don't like? And why should I do work in a prison which make me feel unhappy? But I just did the same I saw my mother do. A single mom raising three kids without higher education. I just saw my mother struggle and I thought, that's how life is supposed to be. Mm. And I never could realize that it could be something else. But I needed the 4 years of pain, 4 years of loneliness, 4 years of unhappiness in that job to understand, to finally find that intuition voice. I deserve more, and what else is there for me? And
so you step out of your familiar.
First I stepped into the familiar.
Mm-hmm.
I applied for a job in another prison.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The prison was closing, so the luck for me was, is my automatic response was, oh, I need to do the same job. And during those 4 years, I worked on myself. I went to a gym for 12 hours a week. I traveled alone, which helped me with my confidence. I watched thousands of hours of personal development videos, which helped me feel better. I couldn't do it yet, but I saw examples. I was inspired by other people doing it. And then meanwhile, thousand little small steps made me feel better about myself. Mm-hmm. And then eventually when the prison started closing, I was too scared. My confidence wasn't big enough. My pain probably wasn't big enough at that moment, or I didn't sit in my pain enough. So I applied for another prison and they hired me. And then for the first time in 4 years, my intuition screamed like, Jonathan, don't you have enough pain right now? You're really unhappy right now in this job. You really don't feel like the way you are, and your talents are. Yeah, this job don't bring up your talents. So you're unhappy now. The last full year you're unhappy. So if you're going to work here, you're going to be unhappy in the future. So it was the first time I was off automatic mode, and it was the first time my intuition was screaming like, what the hell are you doing? Like, and it was the first time, because of all those small steps I did the last the years building up my confidence, that I can give space to my intuition. And then that voice came, what else can I do? I always thought I should be this unhappy. I always thought I deserve to be this unhappy. I always thought I should work just like my mother, because paying your mortgage or paying your rent is more important than your happiness. But then I thought, no, this pain is not worth it. And for me, just taking that small step and then that first start, and like I said to my clients, sometimes one positive thought can change your life. And for me, that thought was, what else can I do? Which make me...
You became curious?
Take the next step. Yeah. And then because of that curiosity and my confidence I built up, I could take the next step. And then the next one and the next one. And I've been basically taking steps for the last 10 years because of it. it all started there. The first step to listen to my intuition, the first step to say my love is more important than the pain, and the way I treat myself is my responsibility, and I can choose. And
going back, would you do it again? Yeah. All the work?
Yeah. Those experiences helped me shape parts of me, helped me shape to recognize my intuition in a way I can now recognize it way easier, just because of all those bad experiences. I can recognize if that's level 10 underground, I can recognize now level 1 underground, like feeling bad or worse or anything, because that feeling is something I never want to feel anymore, but is a good guide in a good way, because I know what to look out for. The same way that some people, we live in a world where I would love that there would be, like, everyone in the world would be loving and kind and be nice and always are considerate.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the world we live in. So sometimes having bad experience with bad people is a good guide to not be naive and to know what to look out for. In the same way, my own bad experience is a good guide to know what to look out for in order to find my positive experience faster.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can truly say I'm really happy I was so lonely. I'm really happy I felt so unloved. I'm really happy I felt so not enough. Yeah. Without rain, the sun wouldn't feel so good, you know? And without that pain, my joy, and just talking about my wife, talking about my purpose today, I feel the instant feeling of being blessed, instant feeling of warmth, like, how lucky am I? And just because I have that, just because there's a bad experience in my life, it's because you've been through other things that makes you realize what's truly important, mm-hmm. and makes you value those things even more. So I value my joy, I value my happiness, I value my self-love even more because of the experience of how low I thought about myself, how unloved I felt, and how unloved feelings I gave towards myself. How I judged myself in a way that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I still sometimes do, because I have those inner demons with me until today. I just found a way to deal with them and to love myself in a more healthy way without destroying myself or the people surrounding me.
Wow, that's very real, raw, and authentic, Jonathan. You touched upon friendships. What do men need from other men?
First of all, I think for women, it's important to have groups of friends and women besides your relationship, besides work, just in order to be more yourself. Men mm-hmm. can be more manly and be themselves surrounding with other men. Like, you can be that with other women, but that's a layer, you know, and sometimes, and for most men, it's really important to have a group of men, to have a group of friends to be with. I love going to business events, or like, I love exercising and sports as an ex-veteran, and I still like do CrossFit and HYROX still today. I love those type of sports. So let me die with other men in on an exercise course, mm-hmm. or someone. I sometimes go to business events where there are like those aspects of it, where you can just sweat with other men. Sounds weird right now if I say it out loud, but just have hard times and just be with other men. I think that's important.
Mm-hmm. Do they need to be shoulder by shoulder, side by side?
In a way.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean with being shoulder side by side? What do you mean
we're
by
now
that?
Sitting sort of opposite from each other. You mentioned women like to talk, connect in that level. But I think men, you mentioned it earlier also, they like doing things. And is that a way of how men connect with each other on a deeper level, shoulder by shoulder, yeah, doing things, sweating together?
That can help. Or sometimes maybe first do something else and then that helps for the connection, that helps them release tension, that helps them then ease into a conversation.
Or what do you wish a friend would have asked you in the time when you were really lonely and you couldn't speak up?
Just being there.
Just no words? Just being there physically?
First of all, just being there physically.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than being lonely. Yeah. I had an expression. I, in a way to avoid my pain, I dated a lot of women. And I use the expression, it's better to be lonely together than lonely alone. And there's just two people being lonely, so that feels better. So mm-hmm. Yeah, just having someone being there is less lonely than being alone. Eh? Even though it's all superficial, it's even better.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that person can ask one genuine question about their lives or about an interest they have, about something that person loves. I would love, I'm a movie buff, and that's another way I dealt with my loneliness.
Mm.
I watch thousands of movies. I still got a hard drive with a lot of movies as a movie buff, and that's a way I zoned out to not feel. If I had someone there just to talk about movies, and then just my passion for movies, that would be amazing. Just that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the start. You know, you don't have to...
Showing interest?
Showing interest in me, mm-hmm, as a person. What else? Whatever it is. You know, that's my advice I also give to like mothers I coach, like they are struggling with their... children going to adolescence, you know, and sometimes it's really hard to connect with your child who's going through adolescence because, yeah, for the first time in their lives, they're trying to doing it on their own, try to relate to their peer group, so they don't need their parents more. So mm-hmm. For most parents, it's really hard to connect with their child. And most advice I gave to a client as well, just start taking interest in their lives, in what they find interesting, especially if you don't like it. Children know you very well, so they sometimes feel even more loved if you show interest in which they know you don't love. So that mother started gaming, yeah, with her son, and I'm like just try,
yeah,
and even exaggerate and like ask him how you can do it, because in that way he feels loved, especially because, yeah, if I listen to a boring story about my wife's work or a story about her friends, and like I said, the example of the dog of the barber while talking of a colleague, and I fell and I'm really interested, and then just listen and ask questions, especially if she knows he doesn't give a shit about what I'm saying, but I know he listens because he cares about me. And that's the way, that's how you show a person. That's what love is, unconditionally. It's not about you. It's about how can you provide and be there for someone else. And just when I was lonely, just showing an interest in me. And that's how it starts. And now you can ask me a deep question. I will answer it. But I don't know if I would answer it at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I had a big show me that you love me radar first. So for me, it would probably would be easier if you just were interested in things I was interested in. Just as an example of, that person really listens to me. Because especially for me, for someone, and you hear that with traumatic people as well, we're really hypersensitive of how people react. And the smallest micro expression. That's what makes me good as a coach as well, because of that. But you really know the smallest micro expressions. You really see if people, non-verbal expressions as well, if people aren't paying attention. Because as a child, that's all I wanted, is my mother to see me, be there for me, love me. So in every way, I scanned and looked at my parents to see, are you paying attention? Do you really see me? And every small bit of do you see me, and sometimes that's bad attention. Sometimes it's me screaming and then hitting my mother, or just destroying something, and just bad attention is a way to seek love and seek connection. But in that way, people who are traumatic, or from my own experience, I know if people see me or not. I truly know. And sometimes my wife get irritated. She's like, we sit on the table and like, is there something wrong? She says, no, because I'm so hyper focused on micro expressions that even though she didn't say it, even though she still processes, I can see it. That makes it difficult in some ways, also really helpful, because I can see if she's struggling with things. But when I'm stressed, I'm like, is there something?
Can also misread it.
Because I'm hyper-focused, I see so much, and which make me good as a coach. On bad days, it's really not good for our relationship.
Can work against you.
On fights and everything, I'm like, we're finally in a good place, and then I see it in a non-verbal expression, and here the shit goes again. I'm like, and like most of those things, like I said, sometimes your talents have a shadow side as well. And those are the negative experience of something you're really good at. And those sometimes are my negative experience in my relationships. And if someone takes an interest in my stuff when I was really lonely, I would see if it was genuine. And I would felt better a little bit that day. And I think that's it, you know? Feel a little bit better than worse.
That's a beautiful one. I like that. Did you elaborate on this so specific also? It's like, I just want someone to see me, to show interest in what is about me, what I like, what I'm passionate about, because that makes you connect. That's beautiful. A great first step for other men out there to form a deeper, meaningful relationship with their male friends.
Yeah, and I think it's so important, especially when you're alone, just seek out places you can go, you know, and seek out healthy places. Don't go to a bar, but go places where, maybe your interests align. You know, that's why, in a way, I do think gaming is a way where most men who feel lonely go to. You know, it's a way there they can talk to people, not face to face, where they don't have to talk into their eyes, where true, genuine conversations are being held while doing something that you love, or go somewhere where movie buffs are, or go somewhere where you have an interest in, and see if there are other like-minded people. You know, the more traumatic or lonely and the more worse you feel about yourself, the more you think there's no one like me, and no one is dealing with the pain I am, and you feel more secluded because of those thoughts. No one will know the pain I'm going through. And the first time I shared my story that I went into a group home as a child, it was on a business seminar with like 300 people, and I was shaking and telling my story in the business seminar. And in the break, there were like three people came to me. I was in the child home as well. And then I'm like, and then the more I started sharing, the more I realized I always thought I was the only one. I always thought I was the weird one, and there was no one like me, until I went to like some of those business seminars, and I found out, because I finally shared my story, because I was finally in a place where there were people like me. We all are group animals, and there is a group out there for you. For me, it took 33 years. I'm 39 now. I was 33 when this whole 32, 33 when entrepreneurship and this whole journey and the real true big changes in my life started to happen, because of the personal development I did the years before that, where I found out there is a group for me, where I finally found this is my tribe of people. Mm. I am not the odd one out. I am the enthusiastic, great dreamer, the someone who's passionate about so many things and who loves to share his passion, who loves to see passionate people. And, mm-hmm. and that's one of the reasons I started a podcast talking about passion and following your heart, because that's the most of things that makes people come alive is their passion. And sharing your story is finding out that you're not the only one who is this way. You're not the mm-hmm. only one who's dealing with this pain. You're not the only one. And yes, you as a person are special, but don't think that your trauma is the only trauma in the whole world, and that you're the only one who feels that way, because that's just another reason to keep you more lonely. Mm-hmm. There's just your mind judging yourself, trying to keep you in that lonely place that doesn't benefit you. So why would you believe that thought, especially if it's not true?
What's one thing, maybe in like a short encouraging sentence for everyone to really take away, write it down right now in this moment if you're listening, but really for men who are having this internal struggle, maybe similar to what you have there. They have their walls up, they want to feel their feelings, cannot feel their feelings, they're in avoidance, they're worried also, that starting maybe your healing journey, going and turning inward, would chip away their masculinity. What's one sentence, one message that you would give them right now?
I think you are of value. And I especially purposely not using the words you are enough, mm-hmm. but you are of value. I think when you feel the way I felt for a long time, you think you're valueless. You think you're not worth anything. And like I said, your outside world becomes like your inside world. You start to think, I don't deserve a loving relationship. I don't deserve happiness. I don't deserve all those things. Those people who I perceive are more valuable than me.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you have those thoughts, the longer those experiences are, the more you think those thoughts are true. I don't have any value in this life. Who needs me? Who wants me? And instead of focusing on what you can be for the outside world, it's realizing first you are of value. You are of value.
Really feel that one. Your value.
And it's not what you provide. It's not the talents or how good you are with your hands or whatever you do in your job or how you are to other people. Just you as a person are of value. There is something valuable about you. Even if you don't see it, doesn't mean it's not true.
I like that one. That's really, really wonderful.
Yeah, and I felt a little bit of sadness thinking about Jonathan in that moment, feeling really, 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 really bad, who really needed that words. Mm-hmm. Really, I couldn't say it. It was like a movie on a screen that was a fiction, even those words. But if I would have someone say that to me in a true, genuine way, or in a magical way, there was a magical morning where I could use that word, Yeah, that would mean the world to me in those moments.
It's touched your heart.
Yeah. Sometimes I, and that's the human experience. We're so used of how life is right now that we sometimes forget those bad moments. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the things we wish for right now are the things we dreamed about when we had nothing or we had pain or like so many things we have to be grateful about. And because of the human experience, we forget it. So podcasts or talking about my past, sometimes I forgot that I was that person. It feels, and it is like three lifetimes ago. I always say when you work on yourself, you go from version 1 to 2.0, and I think I'm working on version 4.0 right now. So it feels like in a distant past for me.
Growing and learning.
And I forget about that feeling. So talking about it is like... And that's also a good thing, like the feeling when you're in the shit, it feels like you're it's never gonna end. When you're in those dark places, automatic, those lonely places, so places like it feels like it's gonna go forever, like you're never gonna get out of it. And I'm here sitting there, and I cannot even imagine feeling that way ever again. And that was me. And that's the most magical thing ever. Just that sentence is like, wow, this is so something that could never happen to me anymore.
You're not your trauma. You're not your wound.
Yeah. And reacting to things in life, reacting to my own thoughts, reacting to my own pain, reacting to my own trauma the way I did then is something that's inconceivable right now for me. And in that way, I'm really happy that it's felt so weird and distant, because everyone who's working on themselves feels like, how long is it going to take? I already did three sessions, or like I already dealt with this, and now I'm doing it again, or I'm going back 2 years later working on myself. And why do I still have... There comes a moment, mm-hmm, where most of those things... First, your primary reaction is the trauma response. Then you need to learn the secondary reaction, and then the time to respond will be shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And in the end, your primary reaction will become your first reaction. Then the healthy way to deal with things in your life and the healthy way to deal with your trauma and all the things you've been through will become your first reaction. And then the time when the bad things happen will become less and less and less. And now those are the exceptions, talking about our own experience as well. Those are the exceptions. And now talking about thinking about that person, it's 180 the other way around. Where there used to be small pieces of self-love, where there used to be feelings of I am enough, where feelings of being proud of myself were really scarce. It's now the other way around, where feeling unloved is scarce, where feeling not good about myself or not proud about myself are scarce. Not asking for help was my whole pet peeve. I was the one who had one of the biggest survival mechanisms. I'm gonna do everything and anything all by myself. I was going with the garbage can, or the big garbage can. I don't know if you have that in Germany, but I had a broken leg, I had crutches, walked to the streets, it took me 10 minutes I drove home from the hospital with a broken leg because I was the one who did everything on their own, and asking for help was a sin. Mm-hmm. Asking for help was something you don't do. Mm. You deal with it on your own. And it's really helpful when you're in your army and you're wearing a 50 kilogram rucksack and you're like, and the sergeant said, we still have 100 kilometers to go. I'm like, I'm used to dealing with my own shit. That was really good. Mm-hmm. I was strong. I was used to deal with my shit because I was dealing it with my whole life. It's not helpful when you can't anymore. It's not helpful when you need help from other people. It's not helpful when you are an entrepreneur.
No.
And you're like, true. Oh my God, I have to do marketing, sales. I have to do customer, everything. And yeah. Oh, I have to do everything on my own. I'm driving myself crazy. It's not helpful in life to do everything on your own. We need other people
that
to become
so
a person.
True.
We need to have someone to be there on moments. Mm-hmm. Even though... everyone has their own moment where they need help. And for some is it more, no judgment. But just in a moment you say, I'm human. I can't deal with it anymore. And can you help me? And the last 7 years, I really learned to ask for help.
That's beautiful. And for that's something that connects to my last question. Mm. If you could travel back in time, and it's something I ask everyone who comes on my podcast. You can choose whatever age. It can be yesterday. It can be your childhood self, your teenage self. But you could travel back in time and give yourself one piece of advice. Where would you go and what would you say?
Maybe because I have a daughter that's 2 right now. I just go back to me when I was young as a kid. And just see him for who he truly is, and with full attention, full loving, unconditional loving eyes, be there, and then let him be for who he is, and then show him by my presence that he is loved. And then he can act crazy, he can act childish, he can act whatever the way he's acting. I'm in whatever way, I'm going to be present there and then show that that's okay, without words, even like unconditional presence.
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
thank you, Jonathan. Thank you so much for being on my podcast. Now I'm also curious, can you share with everyone who's listening and watching how they can find you?
If you want to find me, my company name is Freedom Motivates. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on TikTok, Facebook. You can go to my website, freedommotivates.nl. And if you want to reach out, you're welcome.
You've also a podcast?
Also got a podcast, Dutch name, Hart en Zakelijk. You can find it on Spotify if you want to listen to deep conversations with people who are passionate just like me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching another episode of Real, Raw and Authentic. I hope this one truly encouraged you to go on your own healing journey and to be more vulnerable. Please put in the comments what you like the most about this episode, and do not forget to hit the subscribe button to support me that I can make more episodes just like that and travel around the world to bring in wonderful, empowering stories, experts to encourage you on your healing journey. Thank you so much for listening. Take good care of yourself, and I'll see you in the next episode, wherever that's gonna be.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about, like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you and prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.